Well, your first one here. What would you like to talk about?
The calculus behind are used for parametric, not parametric. Yeah, parametric equations first.
Okay. Markers. Okay, some parametric equations calculus. Some markers in here somewhere. Yep. Okay. Setup. Some x and y are functions of t. That's kind of the pre-calculus part there. And yeah, the calculus part, we start talking about derivatives and integrals, right? And that part, everyone is pretty comfortable with that because they just think, oh, the dt's cancel. And that it's true under the correct interpretation of the dt's. It's basically the chain rule in action here. Now, what usually gets people in trouble is when they're asked to compute a second derivative of y with respect to x. You have to think very carefully about what does that mean. See, it's a dx squared, but it's not a dy squared. So you can't just square it, nor does it work to take second derivatives because then you'd have d, if you took a second derivative down here, you'd have d squared x, not dx squared, which is not what you want. It's very tempting to write it this way, but yeah, the d squared x, the second differential of x, is not the same as the square of dx. So. The notation is kind of subtle on that point. But if you go back to all the definitions in terms of, say, limits. This is the right one. And I can mention some other things, of course. So you have these are the main things, right? Tricky derivative thing. This is usually pretty easy. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff you can do with integrals. So you've got your arc length, which is pretty straightforward. Especially if you're thinking in terms of differentials, right? Because the ds here is always the square root of dx squared plus dy squared, so it's just a simple matter of bringing in a dt. And then there's If you get into area, things get a little more, things can get a little more delicate. But, so the idea is you have
the dx squared and the dy squared, and it's a dx over dt squared, right? Or is it, it's...
This is dx over dt quantity squared, and this is supposed to be a t. So just, in this case, that would just be the derivatives here. You know, so like if we put something here, you know, for example, then something like that. Some understanding of what the curve actually looks like. But if you have a counterclockwise curve, then the area inside, so say you have some start point and it goes around the loop and it comes back. This has to do with basically you're breaking up into a bunch of rectangles. So, this one, so in our case, you know, with now, how do you integrate this way? Think of it, x as a function of t. So, I just write it like this. So x is a function of t, and then here you have the derivative, so with respect to t, times dt. So you can do it all on a function of t. Now, right here, the reason for the x dy is if, say, the x-axis is here. So, how does this thing actually work? You imagine a little piece of it right here, and then there's a corresponding piece over there. So, basically, you imagine grabbing a little bit of dy going up there, multiplied by your x there. But then when you're over here, right, you have, so here the dy is positive going up, but then over here, you have a dy going down, so, and then a different x value. So you see what happens is, that green thing cancels out part of the red thing, but you're left with this. So you are actually getting a rectangular approximation of the actual enclosed area. This is for a counterclockwise loop. It's also equal to the opposite. If you do it instead of x dy, y dx, it turns out that the cancellation is kind of backwards for a counterclockwise loop. this one, this is just a counterclockwise loop backwards. So if you just flip the limits, you get the same thing. So that would have the effect of flipping the signs. Maybe it starts here and it comes back around. Comes in there. There's actually a kind of device that field biologists sometimes use for some things where it has some wheels and you trace it around some closed loop, and the wheels actually keep a kind of a running tally of the either x times dy or y times dx, and you can actually use this. It's like a mechanical implementation of the integral. Anyways, so this is kind of some high-level stuff. And any of these things you can go into more detail. Like if you have a slope, you know, then you can talk about, you know, tangent lines, right? Of course, there's other stuff you can do in 3D when you revolve stuff around an axis, right? So if you have arc length, you know, that leads to, you know, surface area of revolution. Likewise, if you have area, then you can talk about volume of solid of revolution. Did you want to hear more about one of these things, or did you just want a summary? Okay.
The area doesn't mess up if it's in different quadrants, right?
Yeah, there's no problem with this. I mean, it works because I mean, like, say I put the axes here, right? It still works because what happens is, you know, say in this example, so with the x, dy, for instance, so like on this part, now you'll notice that now the, this is doing a y, dx, okay? So here I've actually got, you see the dx is negative, okay? And then also the y is negative. So So that's actually a positive number there. So it's fine. And then when you come around over here, again, now you're going, now the dx is positive and the y is positive. So, and you could imagine lots of other different combinations, right? Where like the loop is all in the third quadrant or whatever, but it always works. It's not obvious that it's always going to work, but it does. And you can do other stuff. So like sometimes, let's say I just had a curve that looked like this, right? Or maybe I'm not doing this. Like what if I had this kind of curve here? Maybe the area I wanted was like this. So sometimes you may have to think a little bit. And so for example, let's say maybe the curve goes like that. So there's a curvy part. But then you want to understand the other stuff, right? So maybe at this point, you know, x and y. Maybe here you have to say x is equal to 1 and y is equal to 5. Here x is equal to 7 and y is equal to, I guess, 4. Something like that. And then down here, y is 0, and x is 7. Under here, x is 1 and y is still 0, right? So if you want the area there, you do the same thing, but you have to break it up into four integrals. So the way I drew it, this is going to be a clockwise loop, right? So you can kind of think of it as having a part one here, part two, part three, part four. So you have a loop, but the loop is made up of, the clockwise loop is made up of four integrals. So once you have all these things, you start inventing abbreviations real quick. You have to decide curvy y or straight y. Now, this one, you would just have to use the formula for the curve. So, because it's some curvy thing, so you're going to need to take the derivative of the x formula, right? But for this one, for example, this part two, x is not changing at all. Right? You're going straight down, so there's no change in x. And I rigged it so that this one also, here x is changing, but I rigged it so that y is 0, because it's a horizontal line. So sometimes, if you have horizontal vertical lines in the integral, you can take advantage of that. Then the last part is actually, again, a vertical line. So now you're going up. And again, the dx is 0 because x is not changing. So in this case, because of the way I chose these two points here, I only actually had to do one integral, not four. So sometimes there's little tricks like that. Separator here. This is not about volume. topic requests, or do you want to hear more about this stuff?
I'm good. Anything, really.
Well, I don't want to choose again.
I suppose I can always pick something. This one, we could look at this one some more, I guess. If you go from 0 to 1, think about what happens to this thing. Let's see, actually, this, the x will actually be negative. This, you probably want to have your x-axis over there. On the other hand, of course, the y is always non-negative because it's a square. And let's look at sine analysis on this thing. Look at the derivatives. We're only interested in what happens between 0 and 1. So this one would have a root at negative 1 over root 3. But this is always going to be 1 or greater when you plug in. T from 0 to 1. So. And then this one will have a root at positive 1 over root 3. So that one's a little more interesting. We have when you plug in, say, 0, then you're at minus 1. So this one's negative. And so the crossover must happen there. So that means that then multiplying these together in the region we care about right here, you have positive times negative. So x is decreasing, then it's increasing. And you can pick out some choice points, see what's happening. So at 0, it's just plug it in and get 0. At this one, let's see what we get there. That's an interesting point, it's a turning point. 1 over 3 root 3 minus 1 over root 3. So negative 2 over 3 root 3. And then at 1, we again get 0. And then let's also throw in the y points now. So 0, 1/3, and 1, just from squaring those numbers. So what happens to this curve is it's at 0, 0. Then it goes to 2/3, somewhere over here. And kind of x scale is kind of arbitrary, but the y scale is less arbitrary and given. And we know it's going to come back to 1. So that height's about 1/3. So it does something like that. All right. So very roughly. Does something like this. All right. And if you want to have more precise information about exactly, you know, what's what, you have to look at, like, what does the curve look like? So it's not clear exactly from the slopes that. Right, because we only have an x versus time slope. That's really horizontal speed. Get a y derivative with respect to time, then you can take the ratio. So we can figure out some slopes. So just 0, 2 over root 3, and 2. Now take y prime divided by x prime, get some slopes. Okay, so 0 divided by some negative number is 0. 2 over root 3 divided by 0, so that's not defined. That's a vertical tangent line. On the other hand, we do know that this is actually, I can improve my drawing a little bit, but now I know that this is actually a horizontal tangent line. So m equals 0 right at the start. Here, you know, it's vertical, so no defined slope. And, okay, and then the last one, 2 divided by what? Well, maybe I should actually figure out what this is at 1. 3 times 1 squared minus 1. So 2. So 2 divided by 2 is 1. Okay, so here the slope should be 1. So if it doesn't look like 1, it's because I didn't draw it to scale. Like that. I need to do even more work to get it, to get the concavity right. Okay. So I've got this curve here. Let's do a few things. First, tangent line. Okay, so point slope formula. So we know that here xy equals 0, 1. So x minus 0 equals m, which is 1, times y minus 1. No, got that. There we go. That's point slope. It doesn't matter when the slope is 1, but in general. And you can, of course, solve that for y if you really want to. So it's not important. I think in this case it comes out to y equals x plus 1.
Okay.
More interesting problem. Let's say we take this. The one thing you can do is just figure out what is that area. Then we could ramp it up to volume. So the area. So this is going to be, so you make it a full loop now, and now it's clockwise. So we would want, call this, you know, part one and part two. So there's part one, there's part two. So now on part two here, you're going straight down, so your dx is equal to zero. So this is just the part one thing, which is just an integral from t equals 0 to t equals 1 of y, which is t squared times dx, which is 3t squared minus 1 times dt. So 3t to the 4th minus t squared, 3 fifths t to the 5th minus 1 third t to the 3rd at 0 and 1. And we get 3 fifths minus a third. Shape, I'm interested in thinking about revolving it about the y-axis. That looks interesting. Kind of vaguely like an onion or something. So, it does. Okay, so we know it has a horizontal tangent here. Comes out and it seems to come back something like this. Attempted. So we could revolve this thing around the y-axis. Okay. Now, this brings us to another topic. How do you do those volumes? There's two ways. There was the shell method and the disk or washer method. So which one would you use here?
I'd use the disk.
Yeah. Yeah, you want the disk because if you do the shells, right, and you get something like this. But how am I supposed to figure out how tall that is? So that's what we do. Okay, so you make a disk, so it looks like that. And of course, yeah, once you actually revolve that around, then it's actually a disk. Now the height is easy, that's just your dy. And this is easy too. This is a little tricky here. X is negative, right? So this is actually negative x. In general, the distance to the y-axis is the absolute value of x. Right, so negative x when you're on the left, positive x when you're on the right. You would know something is wrong if you just use an x, because your integral will come out negative. So this is very similar. Actually, the disk method won't matter, because I'm going to square it. It's going to be pi negative x squared, so yeah, doesn't matter. Yeah. Yeah, because the area of the disc is... That's just your pi r squared area of the circle, so... All right, so there's no... Okay, so... So we would have pi, now you have to square x. Slight amount of algebra involved in that, not impossible. 2t for the 2t dt is the that's the dy there. The negative sign actually didn't matter. That's good. Less to work about. So I picked something simple, a polynomial, so that I could actually do this one exactly. If you wanted something else, if you wanted like surface area, I think you would need to do a numerical approximation. I just leave it as the integral, and you could do that integral. Let's talk about what would be the surface area. So if you're thinking about surface area, you'd have a slightly different picture now. You have a little ring. DS goes around the back too, and again you have your R equals negative X. So for this one it does matter, right? So the ring is a kind of, it has circumference 2 pi R around and a little thickness DS. So you need 2 pi times negative x times your ds. Call this a. Maybe I should call it s because I already have another area over there. Different area now. So the surface area s would be. Okay, so 2 pi times negative x would be. T minus T cubed. And then the DS would be that arc length differential, so we'd have DX DT, so that would be 3T squared minus 1 squared. Plus DY DT, which is 2T. Squared, all times dt. So this whole thing is your ds. This one, I don't think you can do exactly. I think I could have my TI-89 give me a number. But I'm not optimistic about it giving me an exact formula. I'm sure it'll give me an exact formula for that one. It's just a polynomial. But this one, probably not. Thank you. garbage. I wish that light worked. Have a little more even lighting for my photographs. Lots of geometry there. Any other topic requests? Oh, I was wrong. My calculator did give me an exact formula. I guess you can do it using a trig substitution somehow. Or some kind of very clever U substitution. Anyways. It involves a logarithm and some fractions. Apparently you can get the search there exactly in this case. Just barely. How we did that. Oh, I know, yeah. Okay. You would make a U substitution. If you make U equal to T squared, you can just barely do this integral exactly. Clever calculator. No other requests?
None that I can think.
All right, let me see if I can. I'll see if I can get this integral then. That's relevant, right? U substitution. Let's see what my calculator is trying to tell me here. Okay. So the trick is you have that T there, right? Well, you have the key is you have a factor of t that you can pull out of here. So you have a factor of t, and then it's a t squared. So that's just going to be a u. So this integral. Look at this. I think you can just barely do it. So the u limits would be the same. Because 0 squared is 0 and 1 squared is 1. And then the key now here is we have a 2 and a t and a dt to match our du there. So you can factor all those out. And you're left with a nice little du. And there's a pi. Then here we still have 1 minus t squared. So that's 1 minus u. Then here, things are okay. Because this, after you square it, is 4t squared, which is 4u. And then in here, we have 3u minus 1 squared. So that is from some of our more recent material. Right? We can complete the square of the quadratic inside the square root, and we can then do a trig substitution, and then get an answer.
Squared minus 6u plus 1 plus 4u. Factor out the 9, complete the square, so that would be u minus 1 ninth, half of 2 ninths is 1 ninth, squared, minus the ninth squared plus a 9. There's my arithmetic right there. Yeah. And I think that's so this is 1 over 81, negative 1 over 81, plus 9 over 81, so plus 8 over 81. Mm. Okay, so anyways, you would make a substitution, V is U minus a ninth, say. And this is going to be your r squared. So r is going to be something, 2 root 2 over 9. And then here, if v is u minus a ninth, then you want u equal to v plus a ninth. Solving for u there. So over here, 1 minus u would be 1 minus v minus a ninth, so 8 ninths minus v. S is, then we have to change the limits too, so negative a ninth, 8 ninths are the new limits. Dv is the same as du. So dv times pi times 8 ninths minus v. And then in here, there's a 9 that I factored out. That's just going to be a 3. And then I'm going to have v squared plus r squared. Trig substitution would you use to get that one?
The tangent?
Yes, it's the tangent. Because tangent squared plus 1 squared is secant squared. So the thing that corresponds to a 1 is the or 1 squared is the r squared. So if you just make it a v equals tangent squared somewhere. Or not, sorry, not tangent squared. V equals r times tangent of, say, theta, whatever angle variable symbol you want. Then you get the usual deal. And then here, you get r squared tangent squared plus another r squared. So the bad news for us is that this is that secant cubed integral. you make the usual restrictions on the theta, of course. Because we're going to have a square root of secant squared in this domain, in this interval, secant's positive, its cosine's positive, but yeah.
And then I have to change the limits to, and yeah. Let me just leave them as V limits for the moment. You see where this goes. Okay. We have an R secant squared d theta. We have a 3 pi. And we have an R secant theta after we take the square root. So I think we'll get... So there'll be two R's, an R squared, and 3 secant factors. So I have to be careful here. Well, actually, oh, but there's another factor. Okay, so part of the integral will be the nasty secant cubed one. The other part will be a secant to the fourth, which should be easier. We're running out of time in any case. I think I got everything in there. Yeah, I got the pi, got the 3, got the r secant squared, r secant, all the dv stuff. Just need 8 ninths minus r. Oh, actually, okay. Secant cubed, not secant to the fourth, but secant cubed times tangent. Yeah, that one is okay. So one integral is kind of a pain. That's the secant cubed one. I guess the other integral is not so bad. Because you can write it as, say you make W equal to the secant. So you break this last one up like this. It's secant squared theta. Let me put the d theta at the end of this now. Secant squared theta times secant theta times tangent theta d theta. So you make this dW, and then this is W squared. And this is actually, so secant theta is the square root of 1 plus tangent theta squared in this domain here. Otherwise, it could be the negative of this. And so this would be 1 plus V over R. So that helps you figure out what the W limit should be in this one, without having to go through an intermediate angle limit stage. I'll just leave it in terms of V. And so that one is not so bad. This one, you had to use a few tricks, as we talked about last time, for doing a secant cubed integral. Any other questions or comments? No. Okay. Well, I guess that's a little tour. Some selected topics. Never time for everything. But you can definitely come see me later this week in my office.